passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is Joe Healy. And in a little bit, we will be joined by Louisiana Tech coach Lane Burrows, who is coming by to talk with us all about the Bulldogs, their impressive 2021 season that, of course, saw them host a regional in Ruston for the first time in program history and win the Conference USA West Division. So we're going to get into all of that and a little bit about just where the future of La Tech baseball goes. They opened a new ballpark this year, of course, and so a lot of exciting things happening around La Tech. We're going to get into all of that today with Lane Burrows here on this edition of the Baseball America College Podcast, which is presented by Rapsodo. Rapsodo has become the industry standard in player performance data. Coaches use Rapsodo data as a measuring stick for player development and evaluation. The Rapsodo National Player Database is a free service that allows you to see how you stack up against your peers and provides a pathway to get discovered by scouts. To check out the Rapsodo National Player Database, go to rapsodo.com/national database. All right, Joe, we're back. We're got another great interview lined up today, and we're going to talk about Conference USA, a subject that is near and dear to your heart, I know. So just a banner day all around here on the Baseball America College Podcast.
Indeed. I grew up on Conference USA, as another podcast host would kind of say. I co-opted that from someone else.
It's for Tom Hart to find that Easter egg.
That's right. I grew up on Conference USA. Gone through many iterations, but still does hold a place close to my heart. It feels like it's been a Conference USA type of week. I told you off air kind of about some of the things that have happened here this week, but what kind of reminds me of Conference USA and having grown up in the Conference USA footprint is it's a really sticky week here. A lot of rain. I don't know how it's been up there in your neck of the woods, Teddy, but very sticky here, very wet. Feels very summertime in the Southeast in terms of that. I had my first summer copperhead sighting in my yard. That was pretty cool. Thankfully, my dog was not out there with me because he would have tried to play with the copperhead, and that typically doesn't go well for dogs. And I got a lizard in my house that same day. So it's been, we've had all the kind of the hot, swampy summertime animals out and around, in addition to, roughly 158 degree humidity. So it really does kind of feel like it's just a perfect week to be talking Conference USA based on what we've had outside here.
Yeah, I mean, you get down into the swamplands of, southern I was going to say Southern Miss, which is a literal Conference USA school, but yeah, you get down into like Florida, FIU, FAU, into Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, all these Conference USA hotbeds. Yeah, that's a rough summer for you.
I heard a story one time, somebody who grew up in the Miami area, which is like very nebulous because it's like you've got Miami, then you've got Broward, and then it's just a very South Florida is just a sprawling area when you start to think about all it encompasses. But and he said he was going out to his car one time, and he thought that he'd left his windshield wipers up. You know how sometimes you'll turn your car off and your windshield wipers are going and you didn't realize it or whatever, and then it just turns out that it was two snakes on his windshield just hanging out. That's like my waking nightmare. Like, honestly, like, I would just buy a new car. Like, because I'm I'm pretty good with bugs. You know, the lizard in my house was annoying, but like, whatever. Like the snakes though, that's where I draw the line. I don't mess with snakes, man. I just don't.
That would definitely wake you up if that was what you came out, you saw in the morning.
No doubt. You'd never get in your car as confidently ever again. Like you'd have to like, at least I would, you'd have to like walk around the car. Like basically you'd have to do all that stuff that AAA says you should do before you even get in your car. Anytime you drive, you know how AAA is always like, before you get in your car, anytime you go anywhere, walk around, make sure your lights work, make sure your windshield is all that safe, that nobody does. Like, if I came out to my car and there were snakes hanging out of my windshield, like I would start doing that stuff. Like I'd get on my hands and knees and look under the undercarriage and, you know, see what kind of horrors were lurking underneath, because that would scar me. Honestly, I would not get in my car confidently ever again.
Yeah, I could see how that would happen. Well, we don't have any snakes to scare you with here.
Or snake mascots in Conference USA.
No, just a dragon, I guess.
Yeah, UAB. Yeah, that's technically, yeah. Well, a reptile is as far as mythical creatures go, I guess.
Yeah, otherwise, snake-free Conference USA, so indeed. Hopefully it stays that way. But we talked about it a lot throughout the spring, just how interesting the conference was this year. Louisiana Tech's, it's not a resurgence, just surgence. Louisiana Tech's rise this spring.
A surgence, I like that.
Yeah. It's got to be a word, right? The way that they've gone, and it, not just this year, but over the last few to several, I guess, you know, they have, what they did this spring, I guess, is kind of representative of the conference. Just what they were able to accomplish helped bring Conference USA to the forefront. They, you know, really started off the season impressively in non-conference play. They played Arkansas. They nearly beat Arkansas on Friday night of that series. They did beat Arkansas in the series finale on Sunday. You know, they added another win against Ole Miss. They just had some really nice things in the non-conference, and that just carried over. The momentum kept rolling there, and just what La Tech was able to accomplish helped push Conference USA into the forefront early. And then as, you know, ODU and Charlotte just kept winning games as the season went along, and Southern Miss, you know, that having La Tech already having established like, this is a really good team in this conference, like that just helped push Conference USA further along, I feel like. And, you know, ultimately it ends with La Tech hosting a regional at the Love Shack for the first time ever. And it's also worth, we didn't really get into this with Lane, so I think it's worth touching on this now, Joe, is that, you know, a big part of the Louisiana Tech story is what they had gone through going into this year. And obviously everyone in 2020 went through the same COVID situation, really. But La Tech the year before had, and we've talked about this on the podcast, that, you know, Ruston, Louisiana was hit by a pretty significant tornado in 2019, and it came through and severely damaged the baseball and the softball stadiums, and they had to be rebuilt. And so La Tech was for a while without a home, and they had intended to play the whole 2020 season like at a series of high schools or just other college fields that they could get for a weekend or two. And you know, then in 21, the new Love Shack opened, and it's a great stadium from what we can see on TV. It looks fantastic. And the people of Ruston really seem to embrace the team and the stadium, and everything just came together in this really impressive on the field season. And I think part of that groundswell was what was going on. You know, Louisiana Tech had a really nice fan base to begin with, but having the new stadium to go along with that, and the reason why there was a new stadium, I think helped feed into everything that was about this Bulldogs baseball season.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the 2020 season and their schedule, because I'd kind of forgotten about that as I scroll through it now. That, I mean, they were going to play home games as far away as Jackson, Mississippi. They were, I mean, talk about piecing it together. I mean, we've talked about some teams that have had to do some things like that before. A lot of times it's just because you don't have like a primary facility. And of course that's the case with La Tech here, but this was like, you know, for more tragic and more difficult reasons, as opposed to, we just don't have a good enough facility to play, you know, all of our games there. But regardless, like, it was going to be a really fascinating case study, because it was basically the same team that we saw in 2021. And like, my goodness, if they'd have been able to pull off being a postseason team facing that kind of schedule, where their quote unquote home games were going to require bus rides longer than, you know, or as long as some road trips, that would have been quite a thing to accomplish. And it led into this season where, you know, frankly, it would have been hard to not be heartbroken for them if they hadn't gotten into the postseason this year in 2021, because you throw that on there, you know, dealing with the fallout of that tornado that hit. It's a group that's been together for a long time, you know, and as we'll talk about, I think after the interview here, is that it's actually a team that brings back more than I thought next year, because I just kind of assumed it was an old enough team that most of that team was going to move on. But that's actually not necessarily the case. But regardless, it is an older team that, it's not just that they've been there a long time, it's that they've had some close calls. Like, this is a team that really for 3 or 4 years now has probably been regional quality, but the numbers just haven't always been there. And that's life when you're in a league like Conference USA. Sometimes the numbers are going to be in your favor. You know, I'm talking about kind of opaquely talking about like RPI and such here. Those numbers are going to be in your favor some years. They were in 2021, and some years they're not. And that's been the case with La Tech in the past. So to see them get over that hump was pretty rewarding for that group, and would have been a tough thing had they not, because they were clearly plenty talented enough. And I think you nailed it right on the head, where La Tech emerged pretty quickly last season as a team that, hey, we're, you know, this is a team to pay attention to in CUSA. The way they played Arkansas and Ole Miss, but also, you know, they played LSU earlier in the year. They ended up losing that game, but they played LSU pretty close right out of the chute. And of course, LSU ended up not being as good as we thought we would, but I thought they would, but, you know, a super regional team in the end. So they sent early signs that, hey, this team is going to be something to reckon with. And so once we knew that, it kind of felt like, and we know Southern Miss is always going to be of a certain caliber. Not that Old Dominion and Charlotte weren't good teams on their merits, they were, but also it did feel a little bit like once they had established La Tech and Southern Miss as being the quality they were, like, they could kind of draft off of each other a little bit. Of course, they didn't get to all play each other, which was a bummer, but in terms of the perception of the league, I think that really helped early on, that people had to stand up and take notice of La Tech right away.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot to get into here with Lane Burrows. So let's do that. Let's get to our interview here with Lane Burrows here in a second. But first, check this out. Today on the Baseball America College podcast, we're excited to be joined by Louisiana Tech coach Lane Burrows. La Tech, of course, this season had a fantastic year, got a host spot, finished the season ranked in the top 25, won more than 40 games. All of these things, you're kind of first time things or first time in a really long time things for the Bulldogs. So, Coach, really excited season. Excited to talk with you about how that all came to be and where you see the program going from here. So, happy to have you here on the podcast today.
Man, thank you guys for having me. I tell you what, it was a special season. A lot of people to thank, and obviously what our guys went through for 2 years, not having a home or really a ballpark to call our own or a locker room or a player's lounge or any of that stuff. And, you know, it's well documented what they went through. And I think the best thing you can say about our program and those guys, they didn't leave. And we kind of live in an age now where guys are free to come and go and be eligible to play. And you know, we had a lot of things happen for team wise, but a lot of individual awards this year, and it just kind of came together. You know, we got a brand new stadium, and we had an older ball club and a ball club that had a lot of character makeup and really a great work ethic. And lo and behold, we end up winning the division and West Division of Conference USA. And like you said, get that regional host and played extremely well, lost to a really good ball club, NC State. And crowds were awesome, and it just kind of seemed to all come together in a year when really, quite frankly, not only did everybody need it, our school needed it, Ruston needed it, and very proud of our young men and what they were able to accomplish. And like you guys said, looking forward to getting back going this fall and building off that. And don't want to be a flash in the pan program. We want to keep this thing going and continue to build it and ultimately get to Omaha.
It's been a couple months now since the season ended. Have you been able to take some time to reflect on the season itself? And if you have, you know, what did you kind of take away from it with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've been asked that a lot. And it's, you know, when you're in the battle and when you're playing and you're coaching and you're working hard every day, you don't really pay attention to that stuff. You're just, look, you're trying to get through an inning or trying to score a run or whatever, get through a ball game. You're not really taking in what's going on around you. But from the text that I've gotten from, we got a few former professional athletes that live in Ruston in the area and some former athletes from our school that came to the regional, people came out that had never been to a ball game. And just the feedback I've gotten from them of, you know, the most exciting live sporting event they've ever been to, things like that. You know, you don't know if it's hyperbole, but I think it, the crowds were outstanding. And I think our people did a great job. Our administration, you know, first time we've ever hosted a regional, you guys said that, and you have your concerns as a coach. You want to focus on preparing your team and playing against obviously three other really good ball clubs. And I thought our administration did a great job. It's not easy to host an event like that, put it on. And from volunteers in our department, other coaches, people just that work in our department, they were all over the place and volunteering their time to make sure we did it right. And, you know, I thought Elliott Avent gave me gave us a great compliment and said it was one of the better regionals he had ever been to, best run regionals. And he shook my hand there at the end and pulled me in and said, hey, man, you got it going on here. It's a great atmosphere. And I think it prepared them when they went and played Arkansas. Obviously, they got hit pretty hard that game one. But I thought the way they were able to bounce back, I thought we were able to prepare them for that, quite frankly, because I thought our crowds were good and it was just an electric atmosphere. And yeah, you think about it, what you did, and it's just it's one of those things you don't want to think about it too long. You do want to smell the roses. You need to do that, stop and smell the roses every now and then, but it gets back on you quick. And our guys will be coming back to school here in the next couple of weeks. We're on the quarter system here, so we don't start till September, and we'll be back going. And we feel like we have another opportunity to have another good team next year.
How rewarding was it? You know, you mentioned it being a veteran team. This is a team that has had some near misses to get into the postseason. Just getting to the postseason was kind of an achievement for that unit. So how rewarding was it to get that group of guys, you know, over that hump, not only getting them the postseason, but hosting, just to give them that moment they've been working so hard for?
You know, it unbelievable. Guys like Parker Bates came back for that senior year. We had six guys, and I tell this story all the time. Look, they all graduated. They had their degrees. And Parker Bates, who played more ball games than anybody's ever played here, he broke the school games played record and a lot of other records. He had Hunter Wells. He broke the school hits record in 3 years. Manny Garcia had a great year for us. We had six seniors that had graduated. They didn't have to come back. They could have got on with their life or they could have transferred somewhere else. We didn't know when the field was going to be ready or the stadium. So there were days, guys, look, quite frankly, I've been transparent about it. There were days I pulled up to the high school field and, you know, sit in my truck and go, man, I don't know if I can do this again. It's been 2 years. And I would get out of my truck and I'd hear the bats going and I'd hear the guys, the music going. And our guys are already out there. They would beat our coaching staff to the ballpark, set it up, start hitting, start working. And it was just a group of young men that genuinely, they loved being around each other. They loved being around the coaches. They worked their tails off. They really had no other option. You know, we didn't have a place to hang out. So it was either stay at your apartment or your dorm or go work. And our guys went out and worked and they would beat us to the field. And to see those guys be able what they endured those 2 years of not really having a home and kind of being on an island by ourselves and playing on the road, and to see them be able to celebrate in a brand new ballpark, it was very rewarding. I couldn't be more proud of those young men and all they were able to accomplish. And, you know, we kind of pride ourselves. One thing, we play with an edge. We like to play with a chip on our shoulder and we're blue collar. That's who we are. And, you know, it was different this year. So we put in a bid to host a regional and there was talk, you guys, a lot of people started predicting possibly that we could host a regional. And I thought we had a series that weekend when all the talk started. We didn't play real well. And we of the four games. We split the four games with Marshall, and they were in last place. We were in first, and I thought it was the first time all year, and in a couple of years, I saw our guys play tight, kind of play timid, and it wasn't good. And we got back to who we were though quickly, and to see them overcome that. And you know, you start getting talk about hosting regionals and all that stuff, and you've never been through that. It kind of takes you aback, and it was good to see our guys grow during the season and be able to overcome that, and ultimately keep playing good baseball and get that regional host.
You talk about how well the regional went in terms of it getting run and the crowds and everything, but it wasn't just that. You know, I remember tuning into the Arkansas series on Friday night and thinking, wow, what an atmosphere this one is. And then you would watch the Conference USA tournament, and that was always great atmospheres when you guys were playing at night there. Now that you've been through this ballpark for a season, what do you like about it? What kind of stands out to you about what the new Love Shack is?
Everything. I know that sounds crazy, but it really is. Me and Mitch Gaspar, when they're building it, you know, you're kind of walking through it. You're kind of holding your breath going, man, I hope they do it right. And I hope they don't cut some corners. And they were up against some time constraints, and they really did. They did it right. I mean, everybody that come in here, you talk about the Arkansas weekend, and we were fortunate. We had back-to-back games on that Sunday, guys. We beat Arkansas 2-0, and Jarrett Worf shut them out. That was their first loss. And then we had Ole Miss coming in for Tuesday, Wednesday, and we beat them 13-1 on Tuesday. So it was back-to-back SEC opponents at home. And I think that kind of got people going. We ended up not playing on that Wednesday, but we went to Tulane that weekend and swept them on the road. And that's kind of when you go, wow, we may have something here. But as far as ballpark, I think just a lot of scouts that were here and teams that came in. You got the concourse area underneath the sky suites and the press box. And I think that makes a huge difference when you don't have to walk behind the stadium to go to the concession stand or to the restroom. It's right there, and you don't really miss any of the action. And quite frankly, every chair back, I mean, you can go anywhere. I'm looking out my window right now in our office. It's overlooking the field, and our offices are right here down the left field line, third base line, and our indoor facility as far as player development. We didn't have that before, so we have a really nice indoor with hitting, pitching development in there. And there's not a bad seat in the house. Anywhere you go in this ballpark, it doesn't matter where you stand or where you sit. It's a good place to watch a game. And we were able to keep it where it is, so you get the train to come by about four or five times. It took it to another level, and it's showing in recruiting right now. Kids are coming. It's never been here, and they love it. So couldn't be more pleased with the way it ended up. And those are just a few of the things that we like about our new ballpark. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, on that similar track there, folks like Teddy and I can watch it, you know, or even if we're there in person, we see the crowds, we see the new facilities, everything's new and nice, and we can see all that stuff with just to the naked eye. But there's obviously more that benefits the program with a new facility like the one you have. So I'm curious if you could give us some insight into what are some things that maybe the average person wouldn't know about what the new facility provides that makes your lives easier, that makes your players' lives easier, that kind of allows you to succeed at a higher level than not just obviously when you guys didn't have a ballpark, but even with the older version of the Love Shack.
Yeah, number one, I think you go player development right out of the gate. That's our indoor facility. We had hitting cages that were covered before, but it wasn't closed in. It wasn't climate controlled. And now you're able to do that. You got this big, huge area that you got four hitting cages, or you can have a perimeter netting where we can go live in there. We can pull the nets back. And if it's raining or if it's cold or whatever, we can actually hook it up and have a sim game and go live BP in there. We have a small weight room in that same facility. It's not where we normally lift weights, but it's a smaller weight room that if a guy needs a maintenance lift or a pitcher needs to get a quick lift in. And I think our offices too, we have a big conference room now. Our offices were underneath the old stadium, kind of an old minor league feel. We were kind of in a dungeon and we didn't have any windows. You were just kind of stuck in there, and that's fine, you know, whatever. But now we're overlooking our field. You know, a kid comes in and we can sit here and watch guys practice. If we got something going on, we're with a recruit, and I think it makes a difference with all these windows are open in our conference room. And we have a classroom setting as well. We have a big classroom that we did not have before, so we can do scouting reports in there. That's where we hold our team meetings. And obviously our locker room, players lounge, a huge upgrade from the last one. So the bullpen area is upgraded, and it's a lot of things. And then you talk about the fan experience. We got a new student section out in right field that was a big hit with our students this year. And then obviously our student housing that you guys probably saw when we played Arkansas in left field and left center, where our students live and they come out on the balconies and watch the game. It's just it's a unique setting, and really unlike any other I've seen in college baseball as far as this size of a school anyway. But again, it seems like every day we see something new or think of something new that we got in the stadium. We're very fortunate, very appreciative, and very blessed to have what we got.
So now looking ahead to 2022, you are part of having an older team means that a lot of those players do end up moving on. Parker Bates was drafted, Hunter Wells signed as a graduated senior, and some other guys as well. So now as you start to look at how this team's going to shape up in the following year, what are you looking to get out of fall ball, and kind of what are you anticipating with some newness around this team now?
Yeah, we were very offensive last year. Obviously, you look and you just named those two guys. You lose a Bates, you lose a Wells, you go, wow, man, that's two mainstays in the lineup that were very productive offensively throughout their career. But we do – this year we had – in the history of our program, we had four All-Americans, and we had four guys make All-American this year. And, you know, one of those are Taylor Young. He's back, second base. And you got Jonathan Fincher, left-handed pitcher. He was our Friday night guy. He's back. So I like what we got back. Our entire rotation is back. We played the four-game weekends last year in Conference USA, and all four of those starters are back. We're going back to the three games. But now you got four legitimate starters back. Our entire bullpen's back. We lost two arms that didn't factor in too much. So I like where we are on the mound. It's going to be a lot of guys that's logged a lot of stressful innings. And you go around our lineup, you know, you got Corona back behind home plate. You got Netterville's back. He's been a four-year starter. He was an academic All-American this year. You got Cole McConnell in left field, had a great year for us. Phil Montoya had a tremendous year and tremendous summer. And then we got Jackson Lancaster transferred from Missouri. Probably come in and battle for the center field job, take over for Parker Bates. And I like our club. I think we got a chance to be good offensively again, but I think if you look at it on paper, probably losing those two guys, that's a hit, there's no doubt. But I think from a pitching standpoint and defending the field, I love what we got coming back. And those guys, nothing's going to speed them up. You know, we got some positions to be won, shortstop being one of them, third base. But besides that, first base as well, we feel good about the competition and some guys pushing some guys, and can't wait to get going in the fall. Because again, it's these guys are hungry and they got a taste of it. And I think one of the things, if there is any good thing about losing a regional, especially as a host, you get to see the other team celebrate on your field, and they earned it. NC State was really good, and so much respect for them, and they won it fair and square. I'm telling you, they took it to us, and I think it was good for our team, and that's how you grow as a program. And I know just a lot of our guys stayed here this summer, and they're out here working every day. I see them, and coming by the office, they can't wait to get going.
You mentioned growing as a program there, and it's a good segue. You know, you recently signed a contract extension that takes you through 2026. What are you looking at now as kind of the next steps in the program to grow it where you'd like to grow it over those next 5 years?
Yeah, obviously, you know, again, I said at the beginning, we don't want to be a flash in the pan. And I think my last press conference after we lost out in the regional, I'm not trying to sound cocky, but we're not going anywhere. We're not here to just win and get out of here. I love it here. I love Ruston. I love Louisiana Tech. My two daughters, my two oldest kids are in school here. They're students at Louisiana Tech. I have a younger son that's still in just starting high school, but it's a great place to live. It's obviously we got the facility now that in my opinion is the best in our league. It isn't even close. So recruiting has went to another level. When you're on TV and you're hosting regionals, you got a brand new facility, you should be recruiting at a high level, and it's taking a jump. But yeah, what are we trying to do? It's obvious we want to host regionals again. We want to win our league. That's number one, win your league. And And we made it to the championship game of the conference tournament. Did not win it. Old Dominion ended up winning that, and another very good team. But win our tournaments, another thing we want to do. It's never been done here. And continue going to regionals and hosting them year in and year out. And ultimately get into a super. And when you get to that, it's 2 out of 3. And like everybody, get to Omaha and continue building this thing. And it's a process. You just keep going. You fight every day. You battle every day. And it's off the field recruiting. It's on the field working. And I love the culture we've created here. And I love our coaching staff and the guys we got working. And it's a good time to be a Bulldog. I know a lot of people say that kind of stuff, but it really is. We got the support of our community, our fans, our stakeholders, our alumni, and we got the support of our administration. And I think they see that, hey, you can build a winner there in baseball. And not only a winner, people will come out and they'll see it. And when you get on TV and you get that exposure, it just continues to take your program to another level. And we're not taking a step back. We're going to keep moving forward and do whatever we got to do to get to Omaha.
Your success was a part of a big year at large for Conference USA. You were a one seed. Old Dominion was a one seed. Charlotte had a really impressive year. Southern Miss continued to do what they've done for so long down there in Hattiesburg. Where do you see the conference now? It four bids was a lot for the league. Is that something that you guys feel like you can continue doing going forward? And how do you, as a conference, try and capture this momentum and move forward as a conference?
Yeah, great point. Great question. I think we can. The league was really good this year, obviously. I was at Southern Miss in the late 90s, the early 2000s, and the old Conference USA. It's always been a good baseball league. And I know it's changed and some teams, programs have come and gone. But look, we didn't play Charlotte, and obviously they won the league and won the East. And we played Old Dominion in a two-game set that was non-conference right before the tournament. They came down here, and we got in two really good games with them. They beat us in both of them, beat us in the championship, and one of the top two or three teams we played all year. And we had to play Southern Miss 8 times, and I take 8 times in the regular season. We played them 3 in the tournament. We ended up playing them 11 times and were able to win 7 of those games against a team that I have so much respect for and has kind of ran our league, to be quite honest with you. I think 4 or 5 of those games were walk-offs, just really close games. And our league is really good. And I think one thing you can do is continue to schedule great opponents. And we hosted a regional because we played Arkansas at home, and we won one of those games. We played Ole Miss here. We won one of those, won that game. You go down to Tulane, and you sweep them on the road, and you beat a good Southern Miss team on the road 3 out of 4. That's why you end up hosting. That matters. And I think it's something we, as a league, you got to do. We talk about it in our coaches' meetings. You got to schedule. You don't want to beat your guys down, but you got to schedule good opponents, even if you have to go on the road. And our league's good enough. We got good enough coaches and players, and just keep going forward. And that's where we need to be. I know this year was a little different with the COVID stuff and limited schedules in some of the leagues around the country. But there's no reason we can't build off this. Continue to get 3 and 4 teams every year. I just feel like that's where we are. I've said it over and over. I tell everybody Conference USA baseball is underrated, and there's so many good players and coaches. And again, I think it's a great point. Continue to build off this, but you got to schedule and you got to win some of those games and continue to recruit at a high level.
Speaking of recent news, we talked about your contract extension. Also news out of the program, Mitch Gaspard elevated to associate head coach. Folks maybe didn't realize he was on staff, a guy who was a head coach at Alabama for a long time, had a lot of success there. What has been the greatest attribute he's brought to the program? Where has he been most helpful for you guys?
Well, I can tell you this, he's been very helpful to me. I've respected Mitch for years and years, and he's one of those guys when I offered him the job here and he took it, I said, he's one of those guys as I was coming up as a coach. Mitch is about 8 years older than me. I remind him of that. But look, he was one of those guys when him and Todd Butler had it going down there at Alabama, man. I wanted to be like those guys. They were winning and they were out recruiting and getting after it. Now you kind of watched them and modeled yourself after them. And I've just always been a huge Mitch Gaspard fan. And not only as a coach, but as a human being, just a great man, great husband, great father. And I tell you what, he's been good for me. We kind of have two different mentalities. I'm a little more high strung sometimes, and Mitch is a little more laid back, even keel. And he's been good for me. He's been good for our team. And Offensively, I think the proof's in the pudding, man. What he's done to, with our hitters the last 2 years, look at it. That's all you got to do. And he's taking guys like Parker Bates, who are really good hitters and really good players, but kind of maybe missing a little in the mentality and approach at the plate. And he's brought that. I give him all the credit in the world for that. And to have a guy like that to be able to lean on in the dugout. And, you know, I run the offense and I coach third and everything. I like doing that. But to, you know, between innings or during pitching changes, to have a guy like Mitch Gaspard to, hey, come here, what are you thinking right here? And we may not always agree, but it's good to have a guy with that many games under his belt that has coached at the highest level in college baseball. And he has added so much value to me personally as a coach, as a human being. But look, to our team, I give him a lot of credit. There's no doubt about it. And we're fortunate to have him, you know, and there were some teams that came after him this year and he could have gotten a couple of those jobs. And he's loyal here to us and obviously a no-brainer to elevate him to associate head coach. And again, just excited about sharing the dugout with him for years to come.
We got one more question here. We ask this of all of our guests on the Baseball America College podcast. It's a simple question, but it might take a little bit of thought here. So the question is, what is your favorite sandwich? This can be a sandwich you make, a sandwich you get from a restaurant. Just what is your favorite sandwich, Lane Burrows?
Oh, well, listen now, if you know me at all and people who know me well, you can put a steak in front of me, or you can put a sandwich. I'm going to eat the sandwich. I am a sandwich guy. That's just how I grew up. And, any club sandwich I'm a big fan of, but this is going to sound really elementary and really childish. But I'm sorry, my favorite sandwich, and I've probably eaten 10,000 of them, is a peanut butter and jelly. I'm sorry. I had to go there. It's very simple. Very immature. I understand that. But to this day, I will probably eat 10 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches over a course of a week in a normal week for me. So I love the club sandwiches, anything with a ham, turkey and bacon on it. I'm all about and cheese. But if you told me I had to choose, I only had one sandwich. I was on an island. 100%. Give me some peanut butter and jelly and some bread and I'm good to go.
I mean, there's a reason that sandwich has lasted as long as it has, right? I mean,
there's no doubt. And I kind of feel I feel childish even answering that, but I gotta be truthful with you. And there, if my wife or my kids heard me say something else, they would be all over me. So yeah, no doubt. It has. It stood the test of time. There's no doubt about it.
What is, just quickly for our listeners, someone who has consumed as many of those sandwiches as you probably have a very specific peanut butter to jelly ratio. Would you mind sharing what that ratio is?
Absolutely not. I go heavy on the peanut butter and it's always okay. Great jelly has to be. I'm not real picky on what kind of peanut butter, either creamy or crunchy too. I don't care. I love peanut butter and I will usually go real heavy in that direction, a little lighter with the jelly. I even will, you know, put a little honey on the peanut butter every now and then if I'm out of jelly. So heavy on the peanut butter, no doubt.
Yeah, it's a risky proposition. You put too much jelly or whatever on it, it gets, sometimes it can be a little too sweet, you know. So you
that's
need to,
right. I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, we're on the same page there.
Well, that is, like Joe said, classic answer. No need to feel ashamed about that at all. You're not the first person to say that either. So
yeah, well, that's not the first coach. Yeah.
So it's the baseball sandwich, right? I mean, like the minor leagues subsist on that. You know, I know a lot of college players do as well. So we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us here, get into the Bulldogs. We're looking forward to seeing what the 2022 brings for the Bulldogs. You mentioned some of the guys that are coming back and I was thinking it through. I was like, yeah, they actually do have more back than I might've realized. So, you know, just because Bates and Wells are gone doesn't mean the whole team's turning over. So very excited to see what the Bulldogs have for 2022.
No doubt. Thank you guys for what you do for our game. And thanks for having me on. I'm here for you anytime.
Thank you again to Louisiana Tech coach Lane Burrows for joining us here on the Baseball America College podcast. Joe, that team, very impressive start to finish. And, you know, we talking with Lane there, a lot to be excited about, just specifically on the field, not just about the recruiting and the way that the stadium has energized everything around the program, but just in terms of on field to hear some of the guys that are coming back. I would anticipate seeing Louisiana Tech be right at the forefront of Conference USA again. You know, right now we've had Charlotte kind of pegged as the early favorite in that league. But I think that when you look at Louisiana Tech, there's a lot of reason to think that they can be right there where they were again this year.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, I don't know, you know, we ranked Charlotte in our most recent, the offseason edition of the top 25. And, you know, we'll revisit that at some point. And, you know, we may have to discuss about that because one of the other things that's happened with Charlotte is they've had, you know, I still think there's a lot of reason for optimism there. Like, it's not that we're bailing off of the Charlotte bandwagon here, but they have had a couple of transfers out that were key players on the team this past year. So that's something we'll have to take accounting. But I think more importantly is that I think there was an assumption you and I had, I alluded to this earlier, but some of these guys didn't get drafted, but there's enough older guys here who have been around for 4 or 5 years that, you know, you just kind of assume that at some point it's, hey, we've got our degrees. We just had this season that's going to be difficult to match. La Tech could be every bit as talented next year and not reach the heights they reached in 2021, because it takes more than being good when you're in a league like Conference USA to do something like host a regional, right? So they could be just as good next year, not get back to that same place. So you just kind of figure, I've got my degree. We did what we did in 2021. That was exciting. I was able to open the new stadium. Maybe it's time to move on to whatever's next. I assume there was going to be a little bit more of that in this program. And clearly that's not the case. So, you know, while they do lose some key pieces there that you mentioned in the interview, Parker Bates, chief among them, they also bring back quite a bit. And this team really was, it was a team effort. You know, coaches will say that, but I think in this case, it really rings true because this was a team that, this wasn't even like South Alabama where it was like Ethan Wilson is in the center of everything that they're doing offensively to the point where he was getting pitched around a ton, but it basically gave them a guaranteed runner on base every time through the lineup. And La Tech really wasn't that. They didn't have any, Parker Bates was a solid prospect, but they didn't really have a guy who scouts are salivating over. This is just a really good team that's built in a complete way. They get it done on the mound without a ton of like big time stuff. They've got a lot of players offensively who do a lot of things well, not a lot of guys who really have one or two standout tools, but they're going to be a force to be reckoned with again next year. I mean, that's, I think, you know, we're probably penciling CUSA in to have another year where they have, I don't think we'll predict four again, that we'll talk about why that seems unlikely, but you know, with La Tech doing what they're doing, Charlotte doing what they're doing, and then betting on Southern Miss, like, I think things are trending in a good direction for the league, and La Tech bringing back what they do is a huge part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about the atmosphere that they created there before. I definitely know we talked about that coming out of conference tournaments, how much I liked watching them play Southern Miss, you know, in the Conference USA tournament. Those games were electric. And I just have to believe that everything that they were able to build this year, that has to matter for something going forward, whether that's belief among the team or buy-in from the community or something you can show recruits like, hey, look at this video of all of our fans here. Like, look at the pictures of this place being packed. Like, don't you want to be a part of that? I mean, everything that they were... It was just a perfect complication of events that brought all of that together. They happened to be hosting Conference USA tournament this year. You know, they happened to be able to bring in Arkansas and Ole Miss because it was the first year in a new stadium. They also happened to have this incredibly old, incredibly talented team that was ready to take advantage of all of those opportunities. And I mean, I just have to believe that sets them up in the future to continue taking advantage and somehow turn this into a bit of a virtuous cycle.
For sure. And, you know, you start to think about things like they get to a regional in 2022, big if they have to do it, but if they can pull that off, like it really does start to compound. It's, you know, the old compounding interest theory where, you know, now you've got kids who, I mean, let's be honest, like, you know, you and I have an appreciation for the history and the length here, but if you're a kid who's just starting the recruiting process, well, all you've ever known is Louisiana Tech getting into regionals and challenging for regionals. And you look at the facilities, and if you're a kid who's just entering the recruiting process, like that stuff's pretty impressive. And sure, you know, SEC programs come calling, like that's going to be tough, but like all of that can really be a game changer for La Tech. There's really nothing holding them back from getting a level of player that they probably weren't really even getting in the discussion with 5 years ago, even for as much success as they were starting to have, say 5 years ago. You know, he called it the best facility in the conference. And, you know, I think that's right now. I mean, there are some other good ones, you know, Southern Miss, Rice, but it's hard to imagine one being better than what La Tech has now. And certainly their position to, you know, announce themselves as the most consistent team in the conference, or at least in the discussion with what they do next year. And, you know, as we start to talk about what's next on a conference level, like that's a huge deal, because having teams you can count on that, hey, you know, no matter what attrition they have, no matter what else is kind of going on around the conference, around the region, we know we can bank on this team and that team really being in the discussion to be in the postseason year after year, as opposed to this team made regionals last year, so we kind of know they're on like a cycle. They're going to cycle down next year. Call me in 3 years and let's talk about what they are. Having more teams that are in the former camp, which right now for Conference USA has been Southern Miss and to like some degree FAU, having another team that's in that camp is huge. If this really wants to be a conference that is a 3 and 4 bids, if things go right, type of conference, as opposed to 2.
Yeah. I mean, we can kind of transition here into some larger Conference USA talk. I mean, we talked on the interview about getting 4 teams in the tournament and what that means. You mentioned FAU, and that reminds me that FAU wasn't that far off of the bubble discussion. You know, a couple different games, either during the season or they play slightly further into the conference tournament, and the Owls are right there. And then you're talking about 5 teams. And, you know, I mean, that maybe it would have been a stretch, because, you know, you're asking a lot of FAU to, you know, not just be on the bubble, but get in. But, you know, still, that they weren't too terribly far off. And you start looking at the league overall, Old Dominion is probably going to take a step back from last year, but I don't think they have to take a massive step back. You think about some of the younger players they had come through, like a Carter Trice, that are obviously going to be back next year. And, you know, we talked about La Tech, and Southern Miss has some very key pieces to replace, but they've kind of earned the benefit of the doubt in regards to that. We feel good about Charlotte, always feel pretty good about FAU at a baseline. I mean, there's a lot to be said, you know, and I got very excited about UTSA at times last year, and I think that they're moving in a positive, very positive direction. So, I mean, I think the league can be really good again next year. Like you said, I don't know that we'll, in a preseason field of 64, put 4 Conference USA teams in. Just the number of times that has happened in the history of the league this century is very minimal. But I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to look up and there. That happened on Selection Monday.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it is a conference you get the feeling is trending in the right direction, which I think is not something we would have necessarily predicted several years ago, because
even a year ago, I don't think we would have said that.
No, you're right. You're right. You know, so much of the conference has been tied up in, well, okay, like, you know, Rice isn't what they used to be. And that used to be the tentpole, where it was like, you know, Rice competing on a national level, you know, early on in the new, this iteration of CUSA, it was Rice competing at a potentially national title level. And then you kind of fill around them with a Southern Miss, you know, who is kind of in the next level. And then from there it filters down. And when you remove Rice from that conversation, you start to like really question, okay, what is the high end here? And then furthermore, you know, when you've got less teams you can really bank on being in the postseason, now it becomes tough, because in a league that big, you are going to play teams that just aren't very good. And that was, again, in the case in 2021, you know, one thing that I've been fascinated by is that everything really, and this is not to take anything away from the 4 teams, because it needs to be said, the 4 teams that got into regionals, like they all soared into regionals. There were no close shaves there. those four teams were closer, you know, all closer to hosting than they were to being on the bubble. So, you know, they were sailing in. It's part of the reason why FAU almost kind of snuck in there. But I think it should be said that the events of 2021 just went exactly to script for CUSA to pull off what they did, where you had four teams that were all really ready to compete for regionals. You had, you know, a team like La Tech jump out early and grab some wins that would help buoy the rest of the conference, because their RPI bleeds into the teams they play RPI. And so beating Ole Miss and Arkansas, that's important. You know, Charlotte, you know, had like ECU on the schedule. That was important, you know, so there were other wins in there, but so they had those four teams. And then you really had a pretty defined, with the exception of a couple teams, most notably FAU, UTSA, you really had a pretty clearly defined upper class and lower class in this conference. So it wasn't just that those four teams were good. It's that they really weren't, for the most part, getting picked off by teams at the bottom half of the conference. And so they were all really kind of able to run up the score record-wise in conference play. And so I think that was important too. So you might look at it and say, well, what does this conference need to do to continue this momentum? And one of the things is, okay, getting La Tech to be a year after year regional contender in the same way that Southern Miss is right now. I think that's valid. I think that is a thing. I think the next thing most people might say is, well, we need some of these teams kind of at the bottom to be a little more competitive, to where you don't have as many, you know, RPI anchors in the conference. And I'm not sure that's right, because that, yes, that is true. You'd have fewer RPI anchors, but what you'd also have is teams getting pulled down to the middle a little bit. And if there were a couple of these teams, you know, some of these RPIs in the conference weren't so good that they could have afforded two more series losses, for example. So I do think it's easy to say, well, at the bottom of the conference gets a little bit better, and there are pieces of evidence that some of those teams are getting better, then that would be better for the conference and getting more teams in. And I'm just not sure it's that simple, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. The RPI situation in 21 was obviously so different from what we're used to that I don't want to draw massive conclusions from this. Like, La Tech and USM played 11 times. Three of those were in the tournament, but they played 11 times. That's not happening again. So, you know, I mean, they might not even play four times next year, right? So weird things happen to help them draft off of each other in terms of RPI, to use one of Joe's favorite terms. But that also potentially mitigated some of the bottom run teams. Whereas if, you know, you have USM and La Tech, instead of playing 11 times, only playing three or four times, then, you know, you need the help from somewhere else to goose your RPI. And, you know, yes, some of that has to come from what you do in the non-conference. And Louisiana Tech did a great job of that, and Southern Miss did a pretty good job of that. But, like, look at Charlotte, and they didn't do such a good job of that. So, you know, in a more normal year, you know, Charlotte maybe would have really benefited from RPI help coming not in the form of playing eight games against ODU, but playing three games against ODU and then some other teams on their schedule within the conference being a little bit better. So, you know, I think it would help some, it would help hurt some. Ultimately, for me, taking the next step for the league is to find a team that is capable of winning a super regional, and not just capable, or going to a super regional, getting to Omaha, whatever. Like, they need to find their ECU, to me. Like, that should be what they're looking for next. And that doesn't mean that there can only be one of them, or that it has to consistently be the same team. But if they can have that kind of team every year, I think that would go a long way to really helping establish what the high end of the conference could be.
I think it's a good point. You know, it's, I mean, that was kind of one of the, like if we're going to call a spade here, like that was one of the disappointments of the season that was, is that, you know, Conference USA had two teams that were one seeds, with Old Dominion being a traveling one at South Carolina, and neither of them end up winning that regional, when statistics show, we haven't had a lot of traveling ones lately, so that data is outdated and, you know, hard to read anyway, but hard to get.
I mean, even on. So, it wasn't South Carolina that won the regional.
Correct. Yes. So, but the data shows that one seeds overwhelmingly win their regionals, and so they had two cracks at it and didn't get either, and so that's disappointing. And I'm not sure who the betting favorite would be, frankly. I mean, because you bring up a good point, that's kind of the next step for this conference. And I'm not, I mean, Southern Miss is like the default, because like they, you just know they're getting there. They've been to Omaha before. All of that is getting further and further in the rearview mirror, 2009. So they've done it. So it's like, okay, proof of concept is there. They have a lot going for them. There's a lot of history there. But, you know, I'm not so sure that the betting favorite wouldn't be La Tech. Yeah, you could also make an argument for Charlotte based on a lot of things that don't necessarily have anything to do with recent play or facilities, anything like that, just based on access to talent and the ability of that coaching staff to kind of get things turned over quickly. And so it's an interesting debate that I don't know has a clear answer in terms of who the favorite would be.
Yeah, and I don't think it has to be a one team situation. You think about the Missouri Valley operating at its peak, it had both DBU and Missouri State capable of doing it. And Missouri State was in this like every other year cycle for a little bit that was nice. And, you know, in other years, DBU kind of carried the flag. It doesn't have to be one, it can be multiple. But to me, having a team that is consistently thought of that way, a team that we're not just ranking the Conference USA favorite 21, 24, or whatever. Like, I've done that to Southern Miss a lot over the last 5-6 years. But a team that you look at and you're like, yeah, whoever the favorite in this league is right now, like they're somewhere in a hosting position coming into the year. That's the expectation. To me, that's where growth it comes from in the conference. And if that comes at, you know, with a Middle Tennessee State rising up, a UAB rising up and improving themselves, or if that just comes from, you know, La Tech or Southern Miss or Charlotte and ODU or whoever running away from the field, I think either one is fine. I don't know that there's a certain path to that. You know, you look at the American and basically everyone has risen up, and ECU rose a little further, but everyone rose up. And you know, at times it's been ECU, but at times it's been Houston. And at some time in the future, it might be Wichita again, or UCF, or USF, or Tulane. You know, to me, that's the next step for the conference.
Pound for pound, I mean, that's an important distinction to make, because CUSA is a big conference. In terms of number of teams, in terms of how spread out they are, although it could be worse, because UTEP does not play baseball. So, you know, the El Paso trips are not in the mix here. Although for, you know, a team like Old Dominion, the trip to UTSA is probably not much, although you can, it's a little bit shorter, but still that's not the easiest trip to make in terms of distance. So there is that. But I say pound for pound because just the size of the conference, and not all are going to be of equal size here. Is there a conference that stands out to you as being in a better position for that to kind of be the, because I think there's a few candidates here, and, you know, again, getting four teams in isn't realistic for some conferences that are smaller, but in terms of just like the high end being what you want it to be, like I would not have picked CUSA to be in the best position for this a year ago, but now I probably would based on the results they have. But I'm curious who you else think is in kind of that discussion. I have a couple of thoughts, but I think it's a very real debate to have.
So you're talking about a conference outside the major.
Yeah, not the American. Yeah.
Right. Which for baseball purposes we'll define as the Power Five plus the American plus the Big West, because I don't feel like discussing the Big West again.
Yeah. Right.
So those seven conferences out, like who is positioned to kind of join that club or just at least do what what Conference USA has done here and really elevate in some way. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty vague discussion, like vague definition, but I think we know what we mean. I think we'll know when we say it.
I mean, like, for a long time, and we've probably had this discussion on the podcast, I have in some ways been waiting for the Sun Belt to do what Conference USA just did. The fact that they haven't done it yet is stunning and also probably revealing. I just don't know that they're anywhere close to being ready to do it. So my eye then goes out west to the West Coast Conference, which for them, four teams is probably too many to expect. There are 10 teams in that league versus 12 in Conference USA, and they just have no history of doing that kind of thing. But if they got three teams in, I think that would be kind of similar. And you know, you saw Gonzaga push into a position where they were being considered to host. And Gonzaga at their high end pretty consistently has that ability. If they hit on a year where they get the RPI help that they got this year by, you know, going out and beating TCU on the road a couple times, you know, doing stuff like that, that, you know, they can be in that position. We've seen Pepperdine have impressive seasons recently. We know what they're capable of. We know what San Diego is capable of, although obviously now under new leadership. Constantly you look up in the West Coast Conference and you see premium prospects all over the place, not just at the places you would expect, but, oh, San Francisco has an arm that's like up to 95, and oh, so does Loyola Marymount, and you know there are a couple hitters scattered throughout the league. Like, oh, of course, all of that, yeah. And you know, BYU has been impressive lately. So I just feel like the WCC is kind of ready for something like that to happen. They're just looking for someone to take the lead, whether that's a Pepperdine or Gonzaga, BYU, whoever it is. They need someone to kind of take maybe the first step for them.
Yeah, I'm not saying that this would be correct to say, but you know how West Coast coaches and keen observers of the West Coast will vouch for the West Coast by saying it's such an insular region in terms of scheduling, in terms of the players and the recruiting, that, you know, in the Big West ends up being hurt. It always ends up being, or the Pac-10 doesn't get as, or Pac-10, wow. Ooh, Pac-12 doesn't end up getting the respect it deserves. Like, I feel like maybe some of that energy, and again, I'm not saying I'd advocate for this, but some of that energy probably needs to be put towards advocating for the WCC, because I'm with you. Like, the players are good out here. Like, I've done the WCC preview the last couple of years, and like, I end up, by the time I'm done, talking myself into like six teams every year and having a lot of trouble ranking them in the pecking order because of that. And it just, you know, and every year we look up and there's like multiple teams kind of in the mix. Last year wasn't a great example because Gonzaga and San Diego were so clearly the two best teams, but, you know, and yet it just doesn't pop, you know, it doesn't pop like one or two. I'm not sure why, but like, so some of that energy that people say, oh, the Big West gets short shrift, like maybe some of that energy should be spent on advocating for the WCC, because I'm with you there on that one. But I mean, one of the other avatars here for this type of conference, I think, is the Missouri Valley. They're in a different place than Conference USA is, in that they have a very clear team that's like, okay, this is the team that we're waiting to do this, and that's Dallas Baptist. They've been to a super regional twice now. They won a game in a super regional this last time, which is one step closer than they've been before. They're in regionals every year. You know, they have the most talent in the conference every year. And so they're set up different than CUSA, where they're not going to probably get as many cracks at it. I think two things are also true here that feel like they might kind of counteract each other, but I think I can thread this needle here, where at one time, I'm pretty optimistic about the direction of a lot of this conference. When you look at Indiana State, has now pretty much established itself as a consistent team that's going to finish top half in the conference. And by finishing top half in the conference, you're going to at least be in striking distance of the postseason. You know, SIU just had its best season in like 40 years, and they won 40 games. I like generally the trajectory of Illinois State. They got snake bitten a little bit this last year. Missouri State has shown high-end ability in the past. We talked about that. So there's a lot to like in that conference. I like the overall trajectory of it. I just don't know that I'm super confident in anyone else other than DBU from that conference, barring like weird things happen in the postseason, right? You know, a host goes 0-2 and suddenly the regional is wide open. Like that can happen to anybody. But in terms of a team that actually establishes itself as a Omaha quality team or a super regional quality team, I'm not really sure where I would go there. The safe bet is probably Indiana State, just given the consistency, but there's just not an obvious second team here that I really feel convicted is that type of team. And so, you know, you could argue the Valley is in a better place than many of these conferences, maybe even Conference USA, because I think Dallas Baptist's floor is on par with the floor of whatever team you want to pick out of Conference USA in terms of what they can accomplish. But they've gotten a lot closer as of late than just about any team in Conference USA. And so therefore you could make that argument that they're ahead, but teams 2 through 5 in Conference USA are, I think, in better shape than team number 2 in the Missouri Valley in that regard.
Yeah. The Valley obviously has a size problem, but I mean, you look at where some of those, the trajectory of some of those programs, like you mentioned, it's impressive. I think that, you know, they've also been very adept at scheduling and finding ways to schedule well and aggressively that have really helped the whole of the conference. They are consistently, you know, one of the higher rated RPI conferences. They're always in the top 10. They're always in the mix. And having that kind of thing means that at any time you're like one team having a surprise season away from a breakout, like 3-4 bid season. And that's a good spot to be in if you're trying to become a conference that is more, you know, reliably in the major conference range, or at least in the high mid-major range. And again, I would say, like we talked about with Conference USA, with the MVC, the thing here is finding someone to push through to super regionals more consistently. Missouri State has done it recently. DBU has done it as well, obviously just this year, but having it happen on a more annual basis is feels like the next progression for the league.
Agreed. You know, there are a couple of other conferences that I think are interesting just for reasons that, you know, we can either dismiss them or bring them into this umbrella. Like the Mountain West is fascinating. It's a smaller league also, just 7 teams. The trouble there is, you know, they've got a team with a national title in Fresno State, obviously has things going for it, not just history. San Diego State is annually in the mix, but they've been to a lot of regionals, haven't done a lot of winning in those regionals. Rarely are they an at-large team. They're typically getting the auto bid. I think you and I are big believers in TJ Bruce in Nevada. They did it this past year, but are they going to have that consistency? So there are those questions in the Mountain West. I also think last year was kind of an anomaly in terms of, I mean, truly, they had 3 teams that if you squinted hard enough, you could have thought of them as at-large teams if things had broken right and if they'd won a few more games. But I think that one's tough, I think, because who are you really banking on there in that conference? The A-Sun was one that a couple of years ago I kind of thought could have gone, and some things have gone their way. Like Liberty has established itself as the type of team.
Can we talk about how like we had the A-Sun is now bloated and like I have no idea who is even in the A-Sun anymore.
Oh, well,
like,
that's
what does adding EKU and Central Arkansas mean for baseball? I have no idea.
Yeah. Like, you know, yeah, goodness. Like those are, yeah, I do both the A-Sun and the WAC and the Southland for that matter previews every year. And I'm going to have to like really do some digging next year to make sure I have the right teams in those conferences. Cause my goodness, those 3 leagues are the OVC too. Those leagues are really going through some changing. I mean, that's probably a topic for a future podcast, honestly. Like, although it'd be funny, like literally the entire podcast is us just reading off the membership of every league in the country, but just talking about the bottom up realignment here, you know, that we've seen and kind of what the end game is here. Cause the end game is not baseball, obviously, but I do think the end game is instructive of what these leagues want to be, and that can affect baseball sometimes. But you know, the A's Suns, and you're right. I mean, it's gotten.
I mean, in theory, you're looking at Stetson, which mm-hmm. made it to a super yep. in 2019, and has a lot of reasons why you would think that the program is in solid ground. Gulf Coast, which is pretty solid. Liberty, which you know we've seen the direction that they're moving. Like, these are good building blocks. Kennesaw, also a super regional team, within the last decade. Like, there's a lot to like there, but there's also a pretty significant bottom end of the league, which is probably going to prevent, you know, unless EKU and Central Arkansas and whoever else is in the A-Sun now are going to, you know, really come in and go in fighting. Like, just feels like that's a league that is too bloated for its own good.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit, and this is funny because this conference is also wrapped up in another round of realignment, but it reminds me a little bit of the Southland like 6 or 7 years ago when Sam Houston was really starting to cook and Southeastern was really starting to cook. And then you felt like you could bank on, well, McNeese has a lot of raw materials for a good program there. And Northwestern State historically is a winning program. And so you kind of thought, well, you know, like there's enough there that maybe, you know, scheduling is always advantageous in the Southland because you're playing the SEC and playing the Big 12. Like, maybe that's a conference that becomes like a solid two-bid league, and like maybe there's some growth there. And then they went through the round of realignment, where I don't mean to be disrespectful to the programs they brought in, but they brought in a lot of programs that were elevated up from lower levels, and it became a 13-team league, and it just became untenable. And I think there are a number of reasons why the Southland didn't continue to be a consistent two-bid league. But one of them was that the league got so bloated that the scheduling just got wonky. So you were playing wildly uneven schedules. And also, it was entirely possible you were going to play series against 5 or 6 teams that had RPIs of 200 or worse. And that's just always going to make it hard. And I think the A-Sun is kind of in the exact same position, even though you list off those teams, and they've got a team in Liberty who I think, you know, I think sometimes we underrate how much they have going for them when you talk about the facilities and the momentum they have in that program. So I think the A-Sun is kind of in a similar spot to where the Southland was not that long ago.
Yeah, that's an interesting one to watch. I feel like that's a little bit of your hipster pick. Like if it comes together, it could happen. And I don't know what Liberty's long-term position is in anything. That's a program that very clearly is chasing FBS football success. And so that would eventually probably mean trying to join a conference or whatever. I don't know the overall direction of that athletic department is, it's kind of tricky to figure out right now, but on a baseball field, they play really well, obviously. And Scott Jackson just got a contract extension there. They're doing a lot of good things. And if Stetson is able to find high-end consistency, I mean, just those two programs alone are enough to really push a league forward, I feel like. All right, so that's going to do it for us today. Close that out with theoretical realignment. Joe, I think we actually may need to go into realignment. There was a time last year, I think I can say this now, we're probably never actually running the thing in its original construction, but there's a new opening for it. When scheduling last year was looking very confusing, and there was a lot of talk about like regional only or regional centric scheduling, we undertook the idea of like dividing the country up in baseball leagues by region. As like, oh, what if just for this year, we like everything had to be regionalized? Like, how would you split the country up? Like, instead of having a league, the American, that includes East Carolina and Wichita State, like, let's make it so that these teams don't have to get on airplanes very often. Well, that things got messy. That never ran. Like, Joe did his part of it. I didn't really get my part of it done anyway. That's not happening. But Joe, now I feel like with the realignment talk that's happening coming out of, you know, the SEC making their move for Oklahoma and Texas, and now the alliance that's getting talked about at football levels between the ACC and the Pac-12 and the Big Ten at some sort of like high-end discussion level, at least, I think there's a room for us to just, instead of truly trying to regionalize baseball conferences, just trying to optimize baseball conferences. So maybe we'll get into that at some point later this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a worthwhile topic. I mean, if nothing else, just to kind of give people an indication of like where things actually stand and where conference realignment has hurt baseball and where conference realignment has helped baseball. Because for the most part, the results from a baseball standpoint are accidental and incidental. You know, conference realignment is not really happening for baseball reasons, and any positive reactions of that have just kind of been happy accidents, really. I think that there is an opportunity to kind of present that, because it goes way beyond just Texas and Oklahoma in terms of the way the sands are shifting right now.
Yeah, and like we mentioned with the A-Sun, there's a lot happening at the lower levels too. Like, this is not just a high level Power Five realignment. There's a lot happening. There's a lot that's going to continue to happen. So we'll dive into that at some point here in the off season. What I can tell you we're going to do this off season is keep doing this podcast once a week, and we're going to keep bringing guests on like Lane Burrows. Like last week, we had new Cal State Fullerton coach, Jason Dietrich, join us. And so we'll continue talking to people from around the college baseball world throughout the off season. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. And there's plenty of content over at baseballamerica.com. And pretty soon, I think next week even, we're going to be starting with some summer college content in the form of prospect lists. We've had summer college content before. I should say we're going to start recapping the top prospects from leagues around the country. So look for that. I believe that's starting next week over at baseballamerica.com. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Rapsodo for presenting this and every episode of the Baseball America College Podcast. And thank you to Lane Burrows for joining us today. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.